Not Bitcoin Dip Podcast.
Hi there from Indianapolis. How are you all? It's my first time in the city. Cool place. Having a great time. Anyway, welcome to the What Bitcoin Did Podcast, which is brought to you by the mighty Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade Bitcoin. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today I've got an interview with Nelson Minier, the Wall Street veteran who is now heading up Kraken's OTC desk. But before that, I've got a message from my badass sponsors. Make sure you check them out. It is the sponsors that pay for me to do all this, to get all these amazing interviews. So first up, we have Wire. Have you checked them out yet? They've been sponsoring the podcast for over a month now. Have you taken the time to check them out? Come on, do us a solid. Go and have a look at what they are doing. Wire have been helping companies across the space offer Bitcoin onboarding. So whether you are a solo developer or you're a large team, if you want to simplify user onboarding, if you want to offer your users a fast and easy way to purchase Bitcoin, then you have to talk to Wire. Since 2013, the Wire have focused on taking care of all of the heavy lifting, all those pain in the ass things like compliance, payments, and liquidity, so you can focus on building your core offering. If you're working on the next killer app, don't fuck it up. Do not let the regulators kill it. If you want to find out more, reach out to Wire or create a developer account at sendwire.com, which is S-E-N-D-W-Y-R-E.com. Also, we have the amazing Dropbit, the best mobile wallet in the space, and Dropbit have been killing it. I was out in Ohio this week. I was catching up with the team, feeding back them ideas that I've got from you and trying to convince them to get me a Lambo. So, have you downloaded it yet? They've got so many cool things they've been doing. They've recently added Lightning. They've added support for Batch32 addresses. They've added support for onboarding where you can buy Bitcoin directly in the app. You can tweet Bitcoin. You can text Bitcoin. You can do so many things with this app. They've absolutely killed it. So if you want me to get an Lambo, definitely go and download the app. The more of you download it, the more like, I'm really kidding. All right, so if you've also got it and you haven't got access to your Lightning wallet, hit me up on Twitter, DM me, I will send you some stats. I will get you into your Lightning wallet. It's available for the iPhone on Android. Just head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. And lastly, a big shout out to my man Leon and his conference Advancing Bitcoin, which I will be MC for. This isn't a paid ad. I just know Leon is doing some great stuff with this conference and I want to help ensure that it is a sellout. The event is in London on February the 6th and 7th. There will be amazing speakers such as Andrew Polstra, who's twice been on my show, Andrew Chow, Jimmy Song, Nicholas Dorier, and lots of companies in the space. Blockstream, Chaincode Labs, Square Crypto, Wasabi Wallet, and others. So if you want to come to London, you want to hang out, you want to get some fish and chips and have a cup of tea, then make sure you come to Advancing Bitcoin. If you want to find out more, head over to advancingbitcoin.com and use the discount code Peter to get 10% off. Okay, so onto the show today, and I am joined by Nelson Minier, who is an absolute badass. He's a Wall Street veteran. He spent over 20 years working at the likes of Bear Stearns, JP Morgan, and Credit Suisse, but he caught the Bitcoin bug. He left Wall Street and moved over to Kraken to head up their OTC desk. I met Nelly in Vegas earlier this year. He took me out for lunch, and we chatted shit for hours. Really got on with the guy. Really enjoyed talking to him about Bitcoin and, you know, various other things. Life, love, everything else. So I knew I wanted him on the show. I've wanted him on for a while. So when I was in New York, I was like, Nelly, come on, man, let's do this. And he agreed. So this is the show we made. And listen, look, while Bitcoin is easily the most liquid cryptocurrency, compared to other traditional markets, it's still fairly illiquid. So if you're looking to place a large order, you can really affect the price of the market. And this is where the OTC desks come in. The OTC desks facilitate these large trades, and Nelson manages it for Kraken. So in this interview, Nelson and I get into what it's like to operate an OTC desk, his life on Wall Street, how he heard about Bitcoin, his work at Kraken, and what the institutional investors think about Bitcoin. Got any questions about the show? You know you can hit me up. It's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. As you know, I'm out in the States right now. Tomorrow, I'm going to be heading out to Austin for a couple of days, then San Francisco, then LA, maybe Hawaii, back to Washington, into New York, and then home. So many interviews planned, so much good stuff coming up. Also, have you checked out my other show, Defiance, yet? It's at defiance.news. So many cool interviews up there. Please do go and check that out. As I said, any questions, feel free to hit me up. Nelson, man, great to see you again.
Mr. McCormack, how are you, my man? It's been a while.
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks for having me here in the great city of New York.
Yeah, this is where it's at.
It's a beautiful day. It's cold, but but sunny, which is nice, man.
Yeah, that's one of the things about New York, you know, come around December, January, you know, I want to head back to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Where I'm originally from, you know?
I went for a run this morning, ended up on the High Line, and just, because I was thinking, where am I going to run? Because it's just blocks. And I thought, yeah, I'd go all the way down to the, like, sidewalk by, you know, where you can see Jersey.
Yeah. So on the Hudson. You're running around on the Hudson, West Side Highway.
Yeah, that's it. But I ended up getting to the High Line and taking a run down there.
Isn't that awesome?
It's amazing what they've done there.
You know, me and my buddies, we used to go down there and hang out. And, like, it was a place to go drink some 40s and stuff like that. I would have never thought in 1,000 years that there would be, like, that's, like, the coolest neighborhood in all of New York. It used to be a dump.
Yeah, it's lovely, man. Well, but that's happened to all of New York, right? Because when I first came to New York, I came the year after 9/11. So was that 2002?
Yeah.
And I went to Brooklyn with a local, somebody we met, and it wasn't the safest place to go to.
Yeah.
But Brooklyn is now.
No, Williamsburg is something. Yeah. Those are the two areas. If you look at where the High Line and that whole west side, and now in Williamsburg, I mean, those are the two places that are shocking. When I was growing up, I had a girlfriend out there in Williamsburg, you know, by Metropolitan, and I remember I used to run to the train station. Because I was scared. After dinner, I would go spend dinner with her family, and I would run to this train station to get to the Bronx, just because, you know, I was scared I was going to get my tail kicked.
Well, what's happened? Like, is it just too many people in the city now, and they've had to move out? Is it, like, investment?
And I think the whole hipster thing is pretty cool to go out there to Brooklyn and kind of be with, you know, with a lot of ethnicity and stuff like that out there, and there's a lot of different foods, a lot of cultures over there, and I thought it became pretty cool. I didn't think it was going to happen like that, but it's been amazing to see, you know, corners that you would never catch yourself dead at after midnight, or, like, you know, got Louis Vuitton stores you know, you could go shopping at now. It's amazing.
And you say the Bronx is the same, because I was up there last night.
Yeah, by Mott Haven. Mott Haven was pretty, it was bad up there, Mott Haven, on time, and now it's sort of like the next area that's kind of moving up, you know. Right. I, you know, and also Staten Island, you're starting to see with the ferry, there's a lot of, you know, gentrification that's happening. That's pretty cool.
What about up in Harlem? I've never been up there. I haven't even been to Yankee.
Yeah, but Harlem's been pretty cool for a while.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Harlem's not what the Harlem was, I say, late 80s. I mean, that was the first place to kind of start coming around.
And did you spend your entire childhood in the...
No. I mean, I started in the Bronx, got in a little trouble in high school. My parents ended up moving. We moved up to Connecticut. But I've always had family down here, so I would spend, you know, Christmases, Thanksgivings, always around the Bronx and the Bronx area. That's sort of like our home.
I think New York's one of those really amazing, special cities. This is like my 15th time here. I got engaged here, actually.
Wow.
I love the city. It's just got this just amazing vibe to it.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It really does. You know, even when I go, they used to send me to Dominican Republic for the summers. Just to hang out and stay out of trouble, and you know it's amazing how quickly you start missing New York when you do that.
Did you stay out of trouble in Dominican?
No. It's tough to stay out of trouble. I'm still getting in trouble.
Well, listen, man, it's great to see you again. Yeah. I think last time I saw you was about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago.
Yeah, Bitcoin was at a different price for sure.
Well, it was in Vegas. What were we there for? I can't even remember.
We were unconfiscatable. Tom Bezos' gig.
So was that last February?
Yeah, I think so. It was like...
What was that this year?
No, it wasn't this year. It was
Are you
last
sure?
Year.
We're definitely not being like...
I might be mixing them up. I have to think about it.
He's re-announced the next one, and I think it's February.
Yeah, he's been sending emails. I've been getting ready to sign up for it, yeah.
That would be mad if it was 8 months ago, because it feels like a lot's happened.
Well, a lot has happened for you, buddy. Now, trying to get in contact with you, I gotta talk to your admin's admin to get in touch with you, my man.
You can message me. Come on. You can message me. I've just been a noisy bastard on Twitter and getting in fights and stuff like that. But I think it's been a lot's happened, man. Anyway, before we get into that, I'll tell you what we should do. Let's do the backstory, because you told me when we were in Vegas, you took me for lunch, and you gave me the backstory how you, before you became a Bitcoiner, before you started working for Kraken, you were a Wall Street guy, right?
Yeah, I was originally an engineer, and then I moved over to Wall Street when I saw my buddies. Like, they were, you know, kids that I went to engineering school with that, you know, they always used to tell me, Nelly, you should think about trading, you should think about Wall Street. But I was like, you know, a guy that, you know, I grew up around cars. My dad, you know, you give us a rubber band and a paper clip, you think we could fix a Maserati, you know? So I always grew up with that, getting my hands dirty. But then, you know, I saw some of my buddies, like, working on Wall Street, and, you know, they were doing so well. You know, they were going from, you know, studio apartments uptown to lofts downtown. And I'm like, wait a minute, dude, I used to help you with your homework. What am I doing wrong? And I thought I was doing great. But they always told me, Nelly, you should think about Wall Street. And they helped me a lot. And I started my career at Bear Stearns. And I was very fortunate that I landed in the credit derivatives group because I was an engineer. They put the you know math guys a little bit in the engineering group. And you know, we started off, and it was just like an explosion of financial innovation. What was going on? And you know, I was sending out term sheets, working for being an assistant to a trader. And within a few months, you know, they're like, "Dude, I can't handle this. Here, start trading these names." And before you knew it, I was trading and making markets, and that's how I started.
And what was that like when you like? Is it scary when you're first trading?
Oh yeah, because you're throwing out numbers. Like you know, you're throwing out. You know, here I am, you know. Scrimping money together to buy a sandwich, and then all of a sudden you're like 10 million yours, 20 million mine, and you're like throwing all these big numbers around and doing that, and you worry, like, you know, and your P&L swings, like you can lose a lot of money pretty quickly. You know, you can make it, but you can equally lose it all. So it you know, you get used to it after time, and then it becomes like monopoly money almost. But was it scary to be going? Hell yeah. And I wanted to impress, you know, it was a new business for mm-hmm. me, something I knew. And then I had, you know, you're surrounded with these people from, you know, like great universities and with PhDs and all these things. So you're intimidated. You go in there and it humbles you a lot. Markets do humble you. But, you know, you work hard, you keep your nose to the grindstone, and good things happen. And I was very fortunate. I feel blessed in a lot of ways because those opportunities, the time, Bear Stearns itself, it was just a great place for entrepreneurs. And if you hustled and, you know, you got a little lucky, mm-hmm. you could do very well.
And how many years did you work on Wall Street?
I worked 20 years in Wall Street.
20
years. And I bounced around a while. I was a little bit of a mercenary. You know, I went out, you know, wherever the money was, I kind of went there. Like, I, you know, and back then it was like, you know, if you knew credit derivatives, you were like a guy that was really wanted. You know, and I was in emerging markets too, which was another kind of a unique experience set that you had. So I was well in demand until the end of my career. They pretty much wanted to push me out the door, but it was a good time because then I found Bitcoin.
Right. Okay. So 20 years. Well, that's what I did in my previous career. Mm-hmm. I did 20 years advertising.
Right.
And there was a lot that I've done in advertising that's helped me in my new job.
Yeah.
You know, marketing and design and brand and
yeah.
you know, packaging up a product. That's what's yeah. really helped me. That's probably why I'm a podcaster, not involved in and trading or an exchange, right?
Right.
It kind of suits me to package up a product.
Yeah.
What were the key things that you were learning on Wall Street? What are the key lessons that you brought forward when you kind of made the transition into Bitcoin?
You know, the volatility, because the thing that really attracted me to Bitcoin, like I had heard of it, right? I had mm-hmm. a kid on the desk that we were trying to keep busy that, you know, said, "Hey, Nelly, you mind if I look at Bitcoin?" And I'm like, this kid, you know, 50, 60 IQ points higher than mine, keeping him busy was just a full-time job for me. And, you know, he says, "Let me look at this thing." And it was close to what we were doing. You know, it was kind of a currency, you know, something new. And, you know, people started talking about it. And he, you know, he made a presentation on it. We talked about it. He did a group of people. And I was pretty psyched that he came to the same conclusion that I did, that I thought governments weren't going to let this exist. We're like, they're taking too much power away from government.
Right.
Like, there's no way this is going to happen. And you see what happened with Libra. Right? Mm-hmm. Libra, you know, they come out a week later, the government's got a gun to Zuckerberg's head saying, "Yo, you know, you stop this."
Yeah, but have you seen this Facebook Pay thing that's come out this week?
No, I didn't see it. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, so they've announced Facebook Pay. I haven't taken a proper look at it, but it seems to be a way of kind of buying and selling through the Facebook platform just with dollars. And I was kind of looking at that and thinking, well, why do you need Libra now?
Yeah, I think... You know, their intention of establishing a stable coin that's not, you know, debasable, or at least there's some diversification from debasement, I thought was interesting, right? Because if they were going to take a package of assets, uh-huh. whether treasuries and, you know, maybe some foreign exchange currencies and, you know, maybe some commercial paper or whatever they're going to use in a basket, so like that it becomes a maybe more stable than the dollar in a sense, right? Because you're not concentrated in this one asset that can get debased. I thought it would be interesting, but it was obvious, you know, there's a reason why Satoshi got up and disappeared, right? You
yep.
know, you can't, not, Zuckerberg can't do that. And, you know, to see it happen so quickly. And I think, you know, when you're looking at it, it shows you how important it was for Satoshi to disappear, right? Mm-hmm. Because you don't have that guy that's going to be able to stop, right? And the other thing it highlighted to me was also, like, you know, the Trojan horse of Bitcoin is that it's so difficult to understand. Right? It's mm-hmm. like, you know, it takes a while for everybody to understand it. You know, you hear these politicians talking about it and you realize they have no idea what it is. And that's good because, you know, we get to run a little bit more with adoption. We got 10 years and they're still not awake. You know what I mean? That this thing is going to take a lot of power from you guys, and they're not awake about it. So I think it's I think it was a very interesting experiment. And we had a lot of internal discussions on it.
Dude, I'm coming up for 3 years, and I still don't know. What
yeah, no, forget about it. I mean, there's so many facets, neither do I. Forget, you know, I can help get started, and I got a bunch of books here in the apartment that I give away. You know, I give Saifedean's book, I give the Little Bitcoin. That's the combination I give now. I give the Saifedean's Bitcoin Standard, and then I give the Little Bitcoin book. Read the Standard first, then read the Little Bitcoin, because it's going to answer all this stuff. Wasting electricity? Okay, well, not really. Check this out.
So when was it that this was happening? Do you remember what year that you guys were first looking at it?
Yeah, we were looking at it. I would say we were looking at it like 2013, and then then I didn't get back into it till late 2015.
So you just dismissed it?
Yeah, I thought there was no way. I said, "Government's come on, the government's gonna come after this, man. You know, that's where their power is. Like, you know, that's why they could go to war. That's, you know, they can just print money. Look at the deficit. You know, we got trillions of dollars of deficits. You know, that's how they do it. They print more money. Like, there's no way they're gonna give up this power. Guys, wake up." So and this kid that I don't know, he's probably off building rockets now, but he said he came to the same conclusion. So I stopped looking at it, but then the volatility came back, and I'm staring at Bloomberg, and now they're talking about this Bitcoin thing, and I'm a volatility junkie, right? And in the sense that, you know, I traded Venezuela for a lot of years, and that stuff moves not as much as Bitcoin, but it moves.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see that volatility, and I think, okay, well, I think I could make some money on this thing. So I started looking at it from the, you know, filling my pocket up sense. And then I started learning all this other stuff. And, you know, I'm just talking with Trace, and I call Bitcoin the great educator, because for me, it opened up all this other stuff. Like, I spent so much time on Wall Street. I had no idea what Austrian economics were. I had heard about it, but I still don't know the depth. I mean, I'm not going to work for the Mises Institute anytime soon. But, you know, I learned some of the basics and things like that, and you start learning about money and what's going on, and how governments take advantage of the situation, and you know, Bitcoin does that, and you know, I'm just scratching the surface. You know,
I've been arguing all week on Facebook with my friends about socialism, because we've got the Brexit come in, so we've got another election come in.
Yeah,
I've got a lot of friends who are Labour voters. They believe in Jeremy Corbyn. Some of them really stand by his socialist policies, and I'm now like a Bitcoiner, right?
Yeah.
I believe in Austrian economics, and I'm a bit of a libertarian, so I'm like I'm now arguing with them, and I'm arguing like about the things I've learned about. Admittedly, not things I'm brave enough to take to Twitter yet. It takes me longer to learn these things. My opinions aren't as well rounded as, say, like an
Eric
Voorhees.
Well, you think you can get trolled on Twitter? Come on, that doesn't happen.
Dude, I troll everyone. Just know what? It's just like, you've got some smart libertarians out there. It's one like an Eric Voorhees who I can sit and talk to for hours, but I can't defend libertarianism like he can. I can't have the same reasoned debates. But I can see small things that I think are not right. Like, for example, one of the arguments I was having with one person was saying, well, look, Jeremy Corbyn wants to bring free higher education in.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I have a problem with this, because those who choose not to take free higher education are being forced to pay for those who do.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, like, it's your choice. And I kept coming back to the point is that this, I'm not right or left. I'm saying what we should be working towards is less government. Less government, less taxes for all. But, like, I feel like these are like the baby level one steps of all of this.
Yeah, but it opens you up to it. Like, it opens you up. Like, you know, one of the things that, you know, even working on Wall Street and following bonds, you learn that, like, this monetary policy stuff, like, you know, all this money printing, like, what should I do to, you know, take care of my wealth? And then you say, well, New York City apartments, like, they're scarce, they're this, they're that. But then you start doing the work, right? You know, I live in New York City. And then you realize, hey, wait a minute, you know, my property taxes keep on going up higher. And there's not much I can do about it. Nope. I can get up and move, but can I really get up and move with my family here, raising, you know, family here, like, not, you know, kids going to school? And they keep raising them. And even the parking across the street. Like, you know, when I first moved here, I can park in the street. Now, if you go 1 minute over, there's a guy in a parachute that shows up to give you a ticket. It's a new form of tax collection.
Oh,
right? It's not like they're trying to reduce traffic and do all this stuff. I'm telling you, it's a form of tax collection, the way that's going on now.
Let me tell you a story, right? Before I came out, I got a speeding fine.
Mm-hmm.
I was caught doing, like, we have a thing called a dual carriageway, which is like a motorway, but two lanes, right? And it's a 60 mile an hour, and I think I was caught doing 71. Yeah, fair enough.
Right.
I'm over the limit. It comes in the post. You know, I can't argue with it. I go online. I admit fault.
Yep.
I pay the fine, the £100 fine. I missed in the instructions where it said, oh, you need to send your driving license into us.
Mm.
So that was an honest mistake. About 2 months later, I get a letter in the post saying my fine has been refunded. I have a choice of going to court or the court making a decision for me. And I was like, well, I'm not going to court for this. Just make the decision for me. And they came back and they gave me a £600 fine. Oh, so what's that, like $800, wow. $750, $800, just because of the fact that I missed something, right? Now, in my head, I was like, why didn't someone just give me a call and say, look, you haven't sent your driver's license in? Or they've got my email address, Nelson, because I've paid the fine.
Yeah.
You know, surely the system can trigger a letter and can trigger the court. Yeah. So if they can do that, why can't it trigger an email to say, you haven't sent your driver license in. If you don't do it in 30 days, you will go to court.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, all right, fine, I've missed that. I can't argue it. I can't fight it. So there you go. It's another taxation.
And Bitcoin, like, even if it's just a little bit, it gets you a little bit more woke. Because maybe in the past you would have said, you know what, I'm such a dummy.
Yeah.
I should have sent the driver's license. I should have read the fine print.
Yeah.
Well, and then you start thinking about it. Bitcoin gives you that little more boost that says, wait a minute.
Fuck you.
Yeah. What's going on here? Like, this is more of a scam than it is, you know, them fining me for doing. Okay, I did something wrong. I paid what it is. But you can't help me with this process. You got this thing kind of, you know, snuck in this extra £600 on me. That's crazy.
Well, it's a £150 fine for the speeding.
Yeah.
Which is something they don't want you to do because there's a risk of crashes and life, right? Okay. But then there's a £600 fine for not sending off your driving license. The disparity is ridiculous. But I've started to recognize it now. And it was something Eric Voorhees said to me, because I can't buy into the full anarchist libertarian view at the moment. I think of things like, you need property regulations, because if you don't have property regs and a building is built incorrectly and it collapses, people die.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm still in that place where the free market might not solve that. Same with like food.
Yeah.
You know, you package food, prepare food wrong, you might kill someone. I'm still in that place where I think, okay, I need little bits like this. But I said to Eric, I said, I can't picture this world, this anarchist libertarian world. And what he said to me was, he said, we don't have to. What we have to do is push for less government. Let's just say for 1 year, next year, let's reduce the government budget by 1% or 5%. Yeah. And let's make progress. Because if they do that and stick to that, then they're going to have to change some of their decisions. And that, for me, I think is a much more practical and interesting way to look at this.
Yeah.
But it also, I don't know if you find this, it puts me in a place where I find it very difficult to vote for either party. Because I don't want to be in the left class war. And I really don't want to be in this kind of like uncaring right position where it's just kind of like, fuck you to everyone.
Yeah.
So I end up stuck. But there isn't a third option.
You don't have much choice. You don't have much choice. And that's very difficult. Very difficult.
All right, man. Well, so you discovered Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, what was the, like, were you pushed to Bitcoin or pulled into Bitcoin? Like, because you said Bear Stearns, they kind of like were pushing you out at the end.
No, I wasn't Bear, because I was at CS at the time. And, you know, it was more like they weren't pushing me out. It was more like the business is shrinking.
Right.
So the business is shrinking. It became a different business. The Wall Street that is today, right, is not the Wall Street it used to be. And technology is taking over Wall Street. And consequently, there's less and less seats. And what happens is when you're sitting in a seat, you're making good money, and people on Wall Street make pretty nice money. You're making good money, and you know everybody's fighting for the seats, and then all of a sudden another seat goes. It becomes a lot different place. It becomes, you know, it wasn't like, I didn't feel like we were trying to solve problems, moving forward, like, you know, it was kind of more adversarial. A lot more like stabbing in the back and stuff like that, which I don't like. I'm not a politician. That's not my style. And it was shrinking. I didn't like what was going on. And it wasn't the same place. Like you were spending most of your time, you know, worried about regulations or worried about that you don't have a rogue trader. Because now if you're running a desk, you're responsible for your desk. And you can go to jail just like everybody, you know, a guy goes bad on you, you can go to jail too.
Really?
So yeah. You're a Series 24. You're like, you're the desk. You know, I mean, you could get connected.
Neglect
and you know, complicitly and, you know, following rules. I mean, they put the fear of God in you. So,
is it really easy to break the rules if you want to?
Nah, I mean, there's so many rules that, you know, you're going to trip over something. You know, the Nick Leesons of the world and, you know, the rogue traders like that is pretty difficult to do. But you're still worried. Like, you know, you got to keep an eye on it. I mean, at the end, you have to approve every trader's trade. And so you got 1,000 trades. What are you doing? You're not going to check every line
item. Yeah, of course.
Right? So you're just going to, one day, you're going to just close your eyes and say, okay, cross your fingers and say, okay, this looks good to me. Uh-huh. Go with it. But you know, it just became a different place. It wasn't a fun place to work anymore. And, you know, this Bitcoin thing came along and I was like, wow, how can I get into this thing?
Okay.
And I felt very much like, you know, moving out of engineering and into Wall Street, I felt alive, like trying to do something new, something interesting, something I didn't know much about, something that I could learn something new. I got to be top five oldest guy at Kraken. But I feel like young, man. I feel like I'm skipping to work all the time. I feel great. It's awesome. And it's because of this environment and the youth. And, you know, I remember the first time I went to go interview in San Fran. I'm wearing like this blazer. I got a briefcase. You could probably look at me one look, and I'm not a briefcase guy, but I'm trying to play the role like, okay, I got it. You know, I got a couple of things. There's nothing in the briefcase, not even a pencil, right? Yeah. You open up and a moth flies out of the thing. But I'm in there. I'm like, okay, I gotta look good. And somebody, the elevator opens up, and this lady comes and greets me. She's got two full sleeves. She's tatted all up. I'm like, I look like a vacuum salesman or cleaner salesman walking into the place. And it was obvious that I'm like, oh my God, I'm in a different world. But it's so cool. Like so many interesting people, youth, like trying to push this forward. Like there's an ethos around the company that, you know, we're trying to bring this to everybody. We're trying to bring this to the masses. And it's just like so rejuvenating. And it's like a startup feel, like we're fixing problems all the time. There's something new that's going on. I'm on Slack all day, like, you know, just because it's exciting. Like there are issues that we have to solve that require attention and that are cool and moving the space forward, moving the company forward. And you're working with a bunch of fun people.
So Kraken's the only company you've worked for in the Bitcoin space.
It's the only company I interviewed for, the only company that, you know, really attracted me, because, you know, when you're starting to learn about Kraken, and when I started in 2015, you know, you spend a couple of years looking and following and stuff like that. I thought Kraken was the place to be.
And did you go straight into the OTC side?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I met all some right. guys that were on the OTC desk, and you know, one thing led to another, because the OTC business is very similar to the businesses that I ran in the past, where it's 24/7. And running a 24/7 operation is no joke.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I got a guy trading right now. You see my phone flashing there. It's like those are trades popping up. There's guys that are trading. And whether I'm sleeping or not, there's stuff that's happening. So running a 24 trading operation requires a certain level of expertise. Like, you know, you need to know what you're kind of doing. You know, it's you don't and this has been done before, so you don't need to reinvent the wheel. So I brought that with me, and that's pretty much all I brought with me. Like this organizational scheme to try to run a 24-hour trading operation.
All right. Well, listen. Look, I've heard about OTC. Obviously, know what it is.
Yeah.
But I don't really know how it works.
Like, yeah.
It's just this other. Probably because I don't have enough Bitcoin to be using it, but it's just this other part of the industry I don't know much about. So, like, teach me about it. Let's learn about it. It's like the starting point. Explain to me how OTC works.
Sure. So OTC is a 24/7 trading operation. And what we do is we target bigger trades. So anything $100,000 or above, dollars or above, you probably want to maybe talk to us or think about us. And why that is because when you come to us and you're going to do a big, larger trade, we are hooked up to all the exchanges. We take risk. We're much more efficient in the sense that you come to us, we're not going to move the market on you because we spread the trade around and we're going to price it much more efficiently than you would if you were going to an individual exchange to do it.
Right. So if I wanted to buy, like, I don't know, I want to buy 100 Bitcoin. That's about 100,000. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I want to buy 100 Bitcoin and I went via an exchange, am I going to move the market potentially, or is it like higher trades than that?
Yeah. 100 Bitcoin, 800,000. So it's a lot. But so you would come to us. And you would say, hey, I'm looking to buy 100 Bitcoin. Where would you offer it? And we have a trader that would say, okay, I offer it at this price. And you look, it'll be pretty, you know, the market's become very, very efficient in these last couple of years. So you'd be surprised at how close to the mid price you're going to get quoted. And if you like the price, you say, okay, done.
Okay.
And then what'll happen is probably best to take a step back. Yeah. So how are we structured? Was structured very much like a foreign exchange desk, 24-hour foreign exchange desk. So we have a group of traders in the Americas, we have a group of traders in Asia, and we have a group of traders in European time. So, you know, we follow the sun. So as we go through the day, at the end of, say, 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening Eastern time, we pass on there's a handoff that happens, and that handoff means that the Asia traders come in and they pick up and they start dealing with the customers. Then we go another, you know, 9 hours, and then the European guys come in and they pick up and we keep on going. We keep on handing off from one place to the other. As far as clients themselves, in order for you to be a client, you have to be a pro account at Kraken, which is what we used to call a tier four account, which is the highest level of KYC ML. And you come to us and you get, depending on who you are, you can do it in a day, but you get verified and then you're allowed to trade. There's pretty much few rules that we have. One is that you're a pro account. The size of the trade matters. You know, obviously you don't want to come to us if you're going to do one or two Bitcoin. That doesn't make any sense. But if you're doing bigger sizes, you come to us. You know, the name that you use on the account has to be the name that we send proceeds to back and forth. I have to say that because it's amazing how many times. Well, you know, I own the company, Nelly. You know, why can't I just move from this account to the other? I was like, dude, I can't help you with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Can't help you avoid taxes that way, whatever you're trying to do that. So the name of the account has to be the same. So the beneficiary has to be the same as the account that you uploaded on, regardless of whether you own the company or not. And those are pretty much the only rules that we have. And then you come to us, we set up a channel. We love WhatsApp and Signal because we feel like that those are more secure than the other forms of communication. So that's how things normally are set up.
But if I ping you now and I'm like, I want to buy 100 Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You come back to me with a price.
Yeah.
And I say, yeah, okay, do it. From the point of I said yes to actually completing the purchase, how quick is that?
Well, it depends. If you're sending a wire...
So you need the cash first.
Yeah. We always second settle.
All right.
We always second settle. And trust me, like the OTC desk, you should see the amount of scammers that we have to deal with. Like we're at the crosshairs of, you know, hackers and scammers and all that stuff.
All right. We'll come to the scammers. Yeah. But like, say the wire hits you.
Yeah.
And then how quickly?
Well, if you're set up like on the Send network or something like that, it could be instantaneous. You say, you push a button, you call your bank and say, I'm going to ship them the money. It shows up.
Is that Silvergate?
Yeah, Silvergate Bank. Yeah,
I had Alan Lane on.
Yeah,
good guy. All right, so the money hits the thing. Do you then have to requote the price?
No. The price is locked. Once we say done to a price, say where is it trading? 8,600.
But what if there's like 20, 30 minutes and the price slips?
No, that's fine. That's the you lock in the price. That's another benefit. Your price is locked in. Say you like it, lock in the price and you don't have the money. Now, we have to have that relationship with you, right?
Yeah.
Already, and we trust you and whatever. The first trade is probably going to have to be pre-funded. If I don't know you, you come in out of the street and say, I want to do this trade. I'm going to say, whoa, pre-fund it. But if I know you and we got a relationship together, the price is locked. Once we say done to a trade, we are committed to you. Whatever, if the price goes up 30% or down 30%, you're getting that price.
Right. But have you already bought the Bitcoin?
Well, we'll hedge it. We'll hedge it. We have positions. The way we're set up, we are principal. What does principal mean instead of agency? Principal means that we take risk.
Okay.
Like when you come to us, I don't know what you're going to do, but the second I say done the trade, I assume that risk for you. And I will go out and hedge it. Or we might have a position, or we might like the position, and we might write it. I don't believe in much in prop in this business because I think that, you know, Bitcoin is I've traded a lot of volatile stuff, nasty, nasty stuff. Bitcoin is the hardest thing. I can't tell you where the price is going to be the next day.
Yeah.
I really can. And anybody that tells you they can is either a god or a liar because this stuff is hard.
But how do you manage that risk then?
Well, we hedge it. We hedge it on all different exchanges. We a lot of times, you know, this has been happening more and more frequently, but you might be coming in to buy 100 Bitcoin and another guy might be coming in to sell 80.
And you just match.
Yeah. You know, it just happens to be that way. Or we just got hit on some and we're like, oh, right. Now Peter wants to buy it. Boom. We're going to sell it to him. And the difference between where we buy and we sell is where we make the money.
And is there a like maximum size trade? Like if I come in and like...
But also you don't want to move the market. Like, you know, you know, we've had like situations where we've had big buyers come in and like, listen, you want to do that size, you're probably off doing it in lots. Because the price that we would have to give you in order for us to, you know, be comfortable with the risk, at least where we don't get our heads taken off, is probably a price you're not willing to say. You're better off just doing it in chunks. So we've had trades where we've taken 2 weeks to execute the entire trade, but we do it. If a guy's coming in to buy, we say, hey, listen, wait till the market drops a little bit. I don't think there's any rush to buy here, and the market hasn't been behaving that well. Wait till it drops a little bit, buy the dip, and we'll do that. So we'll buy, you know, 500, 600 a day for them and until they build a position where they want to get it to.
And what kind of premium are they paying for this?
It's very tight. I mean, we're within basis points. Like, right, we're not, okay, you know, it depends on the volatility of the market. Like, if you're coming to me and all of a sudden we have one of those days where we're up 15%, you know, and the thing is zooming and we're like chasing Bitcoin and we can't find any, like, every, you know, that might be a different price and the margins are bigger for that because just we don't know what things are going. But yeah, in the most part, in stable markets, it's amazingly tight. And the spreads have collapsed. In just the 2 years that I've been doing it, spreads have collapsed.
Yeah, I've heard about this, like, chasing Bitcoin, can't find any Bitcoin. Is that, I mean, there's always Bitcoin on an exchange, right?
Yeah, but it becomes very thin. Like, the you know, those cell walls that you see all of a sudden disappear. It's amazing how quickly they disappear. And a lot of it's because there's, like, bots up there putting prices, and all of a sudden these things move. And these, you know, there's fail safes on these things. And all of a sudden you see, you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to be able to buy these Bitcoins. You blink, and all of a sudden there's, you're like, oh, my God, there's no Bitcoin out there. You got to start chasing. I mean, there's always some, but there's a price. Right? Yeah. There's always Bitcoin. There's always a price.
Next up, I talked to Nelson more about Kraken's OTC desk and institutions' interest in Bitcoin. But before that, I do have a message from my amazing sponsors. So first up, we have the mighty Kraken, the best place to buy and sell Bitcoin. And have you downloaded their new mobile app yet? Have you checked it out? Why not? Why the fuck not? They've absolutely crushed it with this app. It's beautiful, it's easy to use, the UX is absolutely amazing, and they've got so much packed into it. They've got real-time price updates, they've got multiple charting and order book display options, they've got advanced trading features, you can go long or short on 8 different cryptocurrencies, and they've got up to 5x with margin trading. You can open and close your positions in bulk at just a few taps, and they've got advanced order types. You can also view a complete history of your orders, trades, positions, deposits, and withdrawals. And the app comes with fees as low as 0% and 24/7, 365 global customer support. No excuse. Go and check it out. It's available for iPhone and Android. Just search for Kraken Pro, which is KRAKENPRO. And lastly, but never least, is BlockFi this week. And I love this team. I love everything they're doing. My longest sponsor. It's been like 15 months now we've been working together. They've always supported the show, and I absolutely love them for it. But have you checked them out yet? Have you used either of their products? They have their loans, but they also have their interest accounts, of which I am a customer. I caught up with the team recently in New York. I find out what other stuff's come in. I tell you what, they are going to have a smashing 2020. They are going to absolutely kill it. If you haven't checked out their interest accounts, they've dropped minimum deposits. Interest account holders no longer have to meet a minimum deposit amount in their Bitcoin, Ether, or GUSD balances to get interest. They have also removed the early withdrawal penalty from the account and now offering one free withdrawal per month for all clients. Add to this their announcement of BlockFi Flex, where you can choose to receive your interest payment as a currency of your choice. There is so much happening with this business. If you're interested in trying it out, as I said, I'm a customer. I love getting my interest every month. But you should do your own research and then head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com.
Has the kind of customer changed over the years?
You know, one of the things where I really thought was going to happen, and maybe because I came from the institutional world, I thought we were going to see a lot more institutions come in and buy through us. And that hasn't been the case. And what I think I just was made a mistake in the sense that these guys are going to face like the backs of the worlds, the Fidelities of the worlds, and where they already have channels set up. And once they've gone through the process of understanding Bitcoin, it's not like they're going to be able to put it on their Trezor and say, "Yeah, I'm going to own this for this hedge fund and put it on this Trezor." And no hedge fund is set up to take up assets like that and have it, you know, lying around, have, you know, a couple thousand Bitcoins lying around our trades and say, yeah, that's our position and we're going to do it like that. So I underestimated that. I even hired a guy that was a friend of mine from Wall Street that, you know, like knew everybody. Like he was, you know, spent a long time on Wall Street, had very high positions. And, you know, he had a hard time knocking on doors and trying to get people to come in just because they're not ready already. Mm. But also it's the way the custody issues and things like that are going to happen. So for us, it's much more of a, you know, a retail business, but like wealthy clients, OGs that been around, training around. So we got guys that put around a couple hundred Bitcoin. They're saying, Nelly, if it gets to $8,000, I'm going to buy some. And then it gets to $10,000, I'm going to sell them, you know, and they do that all day. because they're playing around with the company, they're trying to increase their depth. They think they can, you know, do it. And some of them do very well trading stuff around.
Are you ever not able to close a position because there's just not the Bitcoin there, or you have to go back and say, look, we can only get you half of what you want?
Yeah, well, everything has a price, yeah, right? Okay, I mean, yeah, if you come in looking for $1,000, you know, and I'm gonna say, I'm not gonna say I'll sell them to you at 20 grand a coin when things are trading at 8,600. So, you know, there's a balance there, and it depends on the market conditions. I can't sit here and give you an estimate. I can't sell you more than 2,000 coins. Well, you know, it depends on the market conditions for me to say that. So it's not, you know, but most of the time people are reasonable. They understand. They trust us, you know, once they have a relationship with us and they get us going and stuff like that, they open up a little bit. We start working bigger sizes. So we can always find it. You can always find Bitcoin. We always got a place to sell and always got a place to buy it.
I guess with this is that for you guys, it really does bring to the forefront the scarcity of the asset, right?
Yes. Yes, for sure. For sure. And, you know, so we talk about this sometimes when talking about Bitcoin. It's, you know, some of these rallies are not as much like FOMO rallies per se. It's almost like hodling golem things, because people, you know how it is when you got your Bitcoin and things starts rallying. Like, you know, you start believing the guys that think it's going to 200,000, right? Yeah. Like, you know, I have a view. I have a view that it's going to go, okay, 2x next year. But I don't, you know, I think those pie in the sky numbers are, you know, out there. They're out there, but I don't think, no way. The weight of the chain is going to push those prices down, no way. But when you see this thing starts rallying, and then you start hearing all those quotes that you've heard over the years, like you start like, you know, it was Gollum from Lord of the Rings, you're like, mm-hmm. you know, precious, my precious. You start like, you know, you start rubbing your trays, you know, start carrying them around, you know.
do you get like a feeling though for how the market is moving from the OTC desk? Do you get a better impression there?
We watch Bitcoin price every second.
Right.
Like, do we get a better impression from that? You know, there have been some altcoins you really can move the market a lot, right? Because there's thin markets. Well, Bitcoin is pretty, there's some depth. But sometimes, you know, you'll get a bunch of clients coming in one way. And, you know, there might be some news out, or, you know, there's just a feeling that this thing's going higher. And, you know, something, you know, the walls are kind of shrinking. You know, sometimes you get that feel. Sometimes you do, actually. And sitting in OTC for sure. Not all the time, though. Sometimes you're sitting there and you're like, you know, the guys are asking me, Nelly, what's going on? I'm like, dude, I have no idea. What are you looking at me for? You know?
can you get a flood, though? Like, if something happens, you get a flood of calls, does your phone just start, like, going crazy? A load of people are like, come on now.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. When there's volatility in Bitcoin, that's when we're busy. Right. Like, that's the time. That's the time where we're all men on deck.
Are you OTC in altcoins as well?
Yeah, we do. We'll trade anything that's on the exchange.
Right.
And we've done other stuff as well. We've traded like Grin, for instance. But for the most part, 99.9% of the stuff that we trade is the same things that Kraken trades.
Right. Okay. And how much does Bitcoin dominate it?
Oh, it's huge. And it's you know, this past year has been increasing.
Really?
But I want to say 8 out of 10 trades are Bitcoin trades.
Wow. So that's 8 out of 10 trades, but in terms of values,
probably... Oh, it's probably 90 plus.
Wow. All right, man. And you also said there's like, you are a focal point for scammers.
How much
are you dealing with it?
Well, if you take a step back and think about it, right, we're doing the size. We move a lot of coins and we move a lot of dollars, right? So for a scammer, that's where they're going to try to hit up. And you'd be surprised the ways they do it. And I mean, we got a badass security team.
Mm-hmm.
Nick P.
Yeah, Nick's great.
He's awesome. The guy's a stud. And his team, some of his guys on his team are even better, you know? And I got a lot of respect for those guys. Like, some of the hiring that they've done has been spectacular. You know, it gets a little crazy sometimes. You know, I'm walking around with you know, free phones, and like, you keep your personal stuff away from the stuff. So like, you know, Nelson's something else, and what I am at Kraken in an exchange is something totally different. Like, it's not even a name. So, you know, we do a very good job of that, and we're always aware, and we're always, you know, and even on my team now, I have guys that were, you know, worked in the security mm-hmm. field and kind of wanted to do OTC trading. And we keep a pretty tight ship. It's, you know, I thought coming out of Wall Street, we're Wall Street. Like, you know, we keep security. Like, Wall Street are rookies compared to these guys.
Yeah, but you have to be, man. Yeah. Honeypot.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I interviewed Nick, few months back, and I just said to him, I think I said to him, I don't know how you sleep, because
he doesn't.
Yeah. Well, I'm just like, if someone gets into this and they steal this, they get away with a lot, and there's no getting this back.
Yeah. But if you do it right, it's very secure. I mean, it's like that meme with the tracer on top of a stack of gold. You know, it's the math. The math is there. Like, if you got you're encrypted and you do all those things, I mean, it's, you know, we're not too far away from the Federal Reserve of New York, where they got a lot of gold underneath there. In a lot of ways, because of the math, a private key is more secure than all the vaults that they have and all the guards they have roaming around that place.
Yeah, I'd rather fight a private key than a gun, though.
Yeah.
Is the sell side the same? Is it just a reverse trade, or is there something different involved when somebody wants to sell a lot via you?
No, it's the same. It's the same thing. You know, I'll give you an example, and this is a prime example of a client just before you got here. You know, I had a buddy, somebody we all know. He said, "Hey, my dad's looking to sell some Bitcoin for, you know, he's doing something to the house, but remodeling or something like that." And he called me, "Can you take care of him? I'm at the airport. Can you take care of him?" And those are the type of people that we kind of specialize in.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But he's looking to sell, and you know, we took care of him, and that's it.
And how much competition is there?
There's a lot.
How do you differentiate yourself? Is it just service?
You know, for us, there's a couple of things that make us a little different. I think we provide very good service. We focus on that. Like that's our big thing. The other thing is that I think we reached out to a lot more people because it's, you know, we have, I don't know, like 40 account managers globally, and they're all aware of OTC. So if they have big clients that might benefit from OTC services or might need them for one reason or the other, they're telling them, "Hey, why don't you go down and talk to the OTC desk?" And who's got that? Who's got a sales force of 40 people globally? Mm-hmm. I got a sales force. I got two guys, but I also got this other account management group that sends stuff our way too. And what they're trying to do is just provide the best service to the client. Well, okay, maybe this trade doesn't make sense for you on the exchange, or maybe it does. They'll tell them, do it on the exchange. Don't bother with those guys. Or they'll say, "Listen, this is a trade you probably want these guys to get involved in."
Do you have like an indication of how much of the market is OTC?
You know, there used to be rumors that like we did a lot more flow, and sometimes like, you know, some of the altcoins, that might be the case. But, you know, I can't imagine that there's so much volume going through the exchanges now that we're in the same, like we're minimal compared to what the exchanges are doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some days and some coins that we actually do large size, and sometimes we'll move the market. I could see it. I could see us like, uh-oh, we got a big size here, and, you know, we'll move the market. But for the most part, we're not in the same ballpark as the exchanges. Exchanges are doing a lot of flow.
Right, okay. All right, man, so you've been... Was it 2015 you joined Kraken?
Yeah, no. I didn't join Kraken until the end of 2017.
Right, so you've done, like, coming up to 2 years.
Yeah.
All right, so you've got 2 years in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the split between Nelson, the Bitcoiner, and Nelson, the guy who works for Kraken? Like, are you fully in anyway on Bitcoin? Like, are you sold, man?
Yeah, man, this is like, I'm the crazy maniac. At the end of my Wall Street days, I mean, people would see me coming down the desk and be like, "Oh, just don't talk to me about Bitcoin." You know, I was maniac of it. I mean, I got hooked. I got totally, totally hooked in it. And
do you still talk to those guys?
Yeah, you know, it was funny when I left, like, you know, people were like, "Nelly, you going through a midlife crisis, man? Are you want to leave this job? Like, are you crazy?
For Bitcoin?"
Yeah, for Bitcoin. Are you nuts? Like, you know, man, you got kids to feed. Like, you wake up, man. What are you doing, man? You went off and bought a Corvette or something? I'm like, "No, man, this is it. This is the future." And they're like, "I don't know about that." And of course, like, you know, when the Bitcoin price dropped when we were back in Vegas, the amount of texts that I got from my buddies, man, they genuinely were looking out for me. Like, "Dude, are you okay? Like, this thing looks like it's going to hell, man." And it did at the time. I'm like, "Dad, don't worry about it, my man. I'm fine. I'm stacking more sats. Don't worry about me."
Did you convert any of them?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I have. Some of my best friends I have converted, but it took a while. It's not easy.
No.
It's not easy to convert people into Bitcoin. It's, and it's this Trojan horse, really. You know?
Dude, I throw it out there. Like, I put my interviews out there. I stick them up on Facebook. I'll get one question every couple of months. And it's always the same question.
Yeah.
Like, should I buy some Bitcoin? I'm like, just listen to the show, learn about it, maybe buy a bit, hold on to it for 10 years, get a bit as you go. But it doesn't matter what you tell people, they don't buy into it. I don't know why it's such a leap from hearing about it to believing in it. I think it's just so different, right?
It is. It is. And there's a lot of obstacles to it, you know, like explaining it. Like I found little tricks too, like to explain it, to get people to do it. Because when you first talk about Bitcoin, for instance, here's one example, like, how do I get it? What, how do I know it's mine? Well, they start thinking like coins, like in their head, and like this treasure, and like they got to go to a bank and pick it up and put it in their pocket. Well, Bitcoin is not something that is a push system, not a pull system, right? So it's something that exists out there and only you can move it, right? It's not like I'm going to pick up this Bitcoin, put it in my pocket and go spend it. It's no, it sits on a chain and you have an address and only you can move it from that address. And But I've learned to use things like that, like pull versus push, to try to explain it, to try to get it to for people to start understanding, because I see the obstacles, the speed bumps that exist to getting it. But it's still, despite all that, and besides me, you know, besides making people's ears bleed trying to explain it to them, it's still done. But people start coming around. Like, you know, my family members, like a couple of Thanksgivings ago, they were throwing forks at me. And now they, you know, we're sitting at the table and like, you know, things are changing. You know, like, well, hey, Nelly, how's this Bitcoin thing? I bought myself a couple on Kraken. And like, you know, what do you think where the price is going? And I was like, wait a minute, you were the same guy last year that was throwing a fork at me. Like, what's up now?
Wait 10 years, got to be patient. Exactly. Oh, it's always the same though. I always say to people, you got to wait 10 years. You can't just forget the price now. I mean, you can't because of your job. I don't check the price. I only know the price when people put it up on Twitter. I never check anymore. I find it's a lot more healthy for me. I mean, you can't though.
But even like when I go to a Kraken office, that's one of the first things that I know. When I was first there, I you know, they have like Crypto Watch up there and everybody's looking at where the price is and all that. I mean, they're not looking at the prices, but they have it up. And I would stare at the price because that's what I do. And people were walking by. And that day, I remember it was a day that we took a long drop and nobody's talking about it. It's like the longer you in this thing, the more certain you become that it's going to be something you don't worry about what the next 5% are doing. Yeah. You just don't. And people, like, we have, like, things that internally where we get paid in Bitcoin. And people just stack their sats nice and easy. They keep working hard. They keep, you know, we're all working to bring this thing to the masses. And, you know, our time preferences have changed. So we're willing to wait. We know what's going to happen.
Well, that's what Andreas says. Andreas says the best way to get Bitcoin is to earn it.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, that's only just started to click for me.
Yeah.
I do it part, so some of my invoices to my sponsors, I'll get part, I'll get it in Bitcoin and I'll keep part of it. And that's the last bit of Bitcoin I'm going to sell. Of all the Bitcoin I'm going to sell, that's the last one.
But it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because even my business, like I pride myself like growing this business and you know, we're having all these traders globally and working toward, you know, making, you know, providing the infrastructure to take this to the next level. But at the same time, the guys that I'm working with, you know, every day, you know, shoulder to shoulder, 10 hours a day with, we're working on getting more Bitcoin for ourselves too. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. We're creating this machine to not only, you know, create more infrastructure for the general population, but we're creating this machine that creates more Bitcoin that for more hodlers like ourselves. And it's pretty cool. It's a great feeling.
So what's your feel on Wall Street, right? We're not far from it here, to be honest. We're not far from Wall Street, dude.
I can walk there.
You can walk there. My run, I nearly got down there this morning. But we're not far from Wall Street, right? You know, there's a lot of Bitcoin in New York, right? There's a lot of talk about Bitcoin. Yeah. There's a lot of Bitcoiners here. You know, if we forget about Ben Lorsky's bullshit for a bit.
Well, the Bitcoin Center was right on Broad Street, right on the corner wall and Broad, right there.
Spanos, right?
Yeah,
I need to talk to that dude.
By the way, well, a lot of those guys, you know, work at Kraken, you know?
Right. I need to talk to Nick. I really do.
His office is right up the street.
Is it?
His office is on Prince. Yeah, I can show. He's got an office there.
I got to go and see that guy. Yeah, yeah. But, like, why do you think there hasn't been this explosion of adoption by Wall Street? Why is it that, like, why are they still... You know, just, I mean, I know back volumes are growing. I know there is like the very slow institutional interest, but really there hasn't been the expected explosion. Why?
That's a fantastic question and one that I racked my brains with. When I was on Wall Street, I was like, guys, you guys are missing it. And I was on the inside and I couldn't get it. The thing is, though, that this is still like they talk about intrinsic value and all that. Like I was with one of the biggest portfolio managers on the planet playing golf. And I was trying to convince him on it. And he couldn't get over the fact that, you know, the intrinsic value. Yeah. He couldn't get over that fact. But then when I step back and look at it, right, if you're one of these portfolio managers, like, you really, you know, putting this fake internet money in a portfolio, you think about it, you spent you know, you probably got your CFA, you might have got your MBA, you probably worked as an analyst for decades before getting that sweet gig becoming a portfolio manager, the thing that you wanted. Now you got this big place up in Westchester. People listen to you when you talk. You got all this respect, and you've earned it. Like, there's no doubt. Like, you, in order to get that seat, you worked your ass off.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But are you going to risk? You're going to roll the dice with this thing that, you know, you can probably become the laughing stock? You know, I felt it. People thought I was kooky going into this thing. Like, friends of mine are like, hey, Nully, you sure you know what you're doing? You're not going to put this in a portfolio that can possibly go to zero. And you're not going to risk your reputation by doing it. It takes a maverick. It takes somebody that thinks out of the box to do it.
Even the 1%, put 1% of the portfolio in, yeah, still risky.
Because these guys are all fighting for a couple basis points, right? These guys are fighting against ETFs. Like, the difference between one portfolio manager and another one, unless it's a hedge fund and these guys are just taking big swings, but the difference between the guy managing a portfolio at XYZ big portfolio management firm versus, you know, ABC is a few basis points. So this thing can make a difference. And not only that, but it's a reputation. Like, because can you imagine Bitcoin goes to zero? How many people are like, wait a minute, you put my pension money into Bitcoin and you lost me 1% because you put this thing in this crazy internet money? I'm out. I'm taking my money out. And that's what will happen. And that's how you get shot.
How does that get bridged, though?
It's the young people that are bringing it up. It's those people that like anti-state and banks that were spent a year at Zuccotti Park. Now all of a sudden starting to get influence in the world. And it's also the quants, the techs, that understand the math, understand what this is. Those are the guys, when they start getting influence and power, those are the guys that are going to bring it in because they understand it. Right. And they get it. Because it's not, you know, you take the average age of the person in Kraken. It's decades younger than the average person at a PIMCO or an Alliance or at a Fidelity, like these big portfolio managers. Like, the guys running the show at those places are decades older than the guys running the show at these places. When we start making that shift and, you know, you get this, you know, it's a different ethos. It's a skepticism of banks, of the state, and an embrace of technology. That combination is what's going to bring it, and people are going to start saying, wait a minute, you got an uncorrelated asset, ridiculous historical returns, right? That's scarce. You can't make any more of it. Wow, you got to slap a couple percentage points in the portfolio on this thing. And those are the guys that are going to bring it to those. But it's going to take time. And, you know, it's also a maturation. Like, you go through this process of Bitcoin, like we were talking about. But one part of the process is realizing that this ain't going to happen overnight. Like, I thought, wow, the light's going to go off on everybody. I better get in fact. You know, it's not going to happen. It's going to take time. It's part of the process of learning, understanding it, embracing it, and getting comfortable with it.
Well, if you think what happened in 2017, I mean, I was like end of 16, early 17. I also was involved in Bitcoin in 13, but forgot about it because I lost a shitload. But if you think about it, there was like a hype, and Dan Hill talks about this. You know, who's now Kraken, actually. He talks about it like the bull runs as like a marketing loop, right? You have a bull run, a bunch of people come in, they discover a Bitcoin, some get wrecked, some don't, and some stick around, and some don't.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're waiting for that next one to bring the next round of people in. I guess the fear is for Wall Street, if these people come too late, if they FOMO in, like, they could screw up like everyone else does. They could come in late, put in those couple of percentage points, and, you know, could they come in at 50K and it drops to 20, 15? Yeah. Like, that's a risk, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, they know about things like that. Like, if they understand that, they understand volatility. So a lot of these places they scale in.
So they have...
And we're talking, some of these portfolio managers are actually managing billions and billions of dollars. So they're not going to write the check. The way it works is, okay, you do all the work, you understand an asset, you convince your firm that you're gonna add this asset to your portfolio. You don't push a button and all of a sudden you go from 0 to 2%.
Right, okay.
The market probably couldn't take that to begin with. And second, you scale in, and there's methods that they use to scale in that do it. So it's not going to happen like that.
So that's like a Wall Street dollar cost averaging.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, what's the average age of these portfolio managers? Are these people in their 50s?
For sure. I mean, it's got 40 plus, I would think, some of these guys.
So it's almost like, what's the point of risking the end of my career?
Exactly. And you got that nice Westchester joint. You know, you got the kids. You know, you're saving up for them to go to college. And you don't want to rock the boat. So you're just trying to beat the next guy by a couple basis points.
Can you easily be cut out then if you make a big mistake?
No, once you got that seat, you're pretty safe, but you got to make a really bonehead move in order to get kicked out of there.
Right, and does it affect your bonus?
Well, if a lot of them are performance based, but right. You know, we're talking just beating the next guy, beating it. You got to beat the S&P index by a certain amount of basis when you get paid. And they get paid, I think the most important thing that they get paid up for is because the assets under management. So they're attracting assets, they're going out, they're selling something, right? They want more assets under management. That's the big number, right? That's their show off. They wear it like a sergeant wears, stripes on his shoulder. I manage 70 trillion, whatever, or some ridiculous number like that.
Do you reckon any of them are doing it though? Or do you know of any of them that are doing it? Like, is anyone down there?
That we're doing what?
Let's buy into Bitcoin. Or is it like it's just a blank?
I think PA, I think a lot of them are. Because they you're this portfolio manager, you probably got a team. And you probably got some quants on the team. And you got a couple of kids from MIT helping you out, manage your portfolio, making sure your Sharpe ratio is right and all these other things. And the kids probably convinced them, like, dude, you should put a couple of these in your PA.
What's that, like a personal account?
Yeah, personal account, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I'm sure that happens. I'm sure some of them are. But that's the first step, right? If you start putting your PA, you start watching and doing, and you probably start convincing your friends, you start talking to your boss about it, right. You start convincing them. And they have investment committees. So you got to, before you bring in a new asset like this, you're going to have to put it in front of the investment committee. And now you got even older guys. you got guys rolling in. So you have to convince those guys that this is an asset that you want to put in your portfolio.
It's the Trading Places guys. Do you remember that film?
Yeah, you got those guys saying, what? Yeah, you got to put Bitcoin? What? You crazy?
Yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, look. What's coming up for you, dude? What's coming up with Kraken and the OTC desk?
We got a lot of cool stuff, we were looking at. And, I think broadening out our product is a big part of it. Kraken's always good doing because they just came out with the app,
Kraken Pro.
Yeah, blog.kraken.com. I mean, there's the Kraken Pro 5X margin on there. So there's a lot of cool stuff, man. I mean, Kraken is really, Jesse's really doing a great job of bringing this company to the next level. And the team that he's got a strategy team now, and they're helping him look at where's the next opportunity. Right. And, they got a war chest, and he's using it to bring this asset class to the next level. And as far as the OTC desk, we're looking at new products to try to get into. We're not going to be able to just trade Bitcoin. That's not enough. We got to do other stuff, and we're working on that slowly but surely.
And are you missing Wall Street at all?
I miss some of my friends. I still follow some markets and stuff like that. Do I miss the job? Hell no. It was one of the best decisions I ever made in my life. I am so happy. I haven't been this happy in a long time.
What is that? Is it just different environment, less stress?
I feel like it's just all new. And it's different type of stress. It's a stress like I'm building something instead of just doing the same old job.
And you feel part of the company, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure, man. I'm in.
All right, man. Well, listen. Always good to see you, man.
Dude, you're the man, dude. And I'm so happy with your success, man. I remember before you had three assistants. You know what I mean?
I wish I had a assistant. Do you know what? I've got a producer engineer now. And that's been a massive change in that I finish a show, this will be done.
Yeah.
I'll upload it for him. He'll get it all prepped. He'll write my scripts. 2 days later, I'll record the scripts. That goes up. He does everything else now.
What's his name? What's it?
His name's Danny.
Danny, make me sound good, dude.
Danny will make you sound good. He'll cut out the ums and the ahs. But do you know what it's done for me? It means now I can do this other show. So I used to be able to do 2-3 shows a week at max. I can now do 5. I can do more work because I've got, I'm scaling, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, thanks. But look, it's been great to get to know you. I consider you a friend now, man.
Yeah, of course,
I love the lunch we had. Anything you ever need, you can reach out to me.
Oh, you're the man, dude. I'm so happy with what you're doing, and keep up the good work, man. We're going to bring this to the masses, man. People are going to wake up for this.
Well, I hope so. I hope they listen to my show.
For sure.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. You too, man.
Okay, so what did you think of that? Did you enjoy that? Nelson's always great. Always love catching up with him. One of my favorite people I've met in the space. Just a really good dude. And it was also great for hearing about OTC desks with him. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be one of the ones buying or selling hundreds of bitcoins. So the OTC desks are not part of the business that I know very much about. So it was great to get Nelson on. Great to hear about this side of the industry. And as always, thanks for listening. If you did like this show, I would also recommend going to check out my interview with Nick Pococo, episode 129, where we talk about the security side of things as well, because that was a fascinating conversation. And some of this relates back to the one with Nelson. If you've got any feedback, you can reach out to me. It's hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And again, thank you as ever, always, to everyone who supports the show. Seriously, I love you all. Thank you so much. Every review, every sponsor, every listener, everyone who shares my shows out on Twitter. I mean, this week, my interview with Jamie Bartlett has been shared out so many times. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But if you are a listener and you haven't done anything and you want to help, just head over to my website. It's whatbitcoindid.com. Click on the support section and that will explain everything you can do. As I said, tomorrow I'm going to be heading out to Austin, then San Fran, LA, maybe Hawaii, Washington, and then back to New York and home. Hopefully, I'll get to see some of you in some of these places. Anyway, have a great week. See you all soon. Love you all. Thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone who helped with the show.